Okay, hi everyone. We're going to make a start because obviously, as everyone knows, we're running really late. And I feel a bit sorry for the last set of people on because that will be the real graveyard. And it's likely that the bar will be shut by the time they're finished. So, first things first, general data protection regulation is a very dry subject. So, does everyone have a drink? If not, please help yourselves at the back of the room. I've got one. I'll just take a bit of refreshment before we start. Excellent. So, as I said earlier, a very proud moment for me, because I'm going to be introducing my daughter to actually give the presentation. And I'm going to be doing some interpreting as we go through. One, because we're from the UK and you may not understand everything we say. You may get things out of context. But secondly, Stephanie's from a legal background. She's done work in the media. She's from formerly from a US-based law firm, Hunt & Williams. And Stephanie's worked on some of the global brands for general data protection for about 3 years. So she's got a great knowledge of the subject matter, but her knowledge of the production space and the media and entertainment industry is slightly limited by comparison to myself. I've been working in it for 15 years, run the global audit program for CDSA. Also, we've got some very high esteemed colleagues in the room. We've got Alex Pickering from BBC, global head of information security for the BBC worldwide. His team have had to implement a lot of what we're going to talk about this afternoon. So we're going to give Alex an opportunity at the end to pass some comment around the challenges that his team has faced. I'm putting him on the spot. But it's really trying to make this relevant to you because, as I say, the subject matter can be a little dry. We've also got Lulu Zetzer. Lulu's from a production environment from New Regency, historically predominantly, but actually knows everything there is to know about the production workflow. And the relevance to the production workflow is intrinsically linked to what we want to talk to you about because it involves people, and most importantly, it involves people from the US moving to the EU and working part-time in those productions for a short space of time, creating a company that's established in the EU. And also it means that sometimes we've got data that comes back to the US or elsewhere on the globe that actually has EU citizens where we're storing data overseas, both of which will be relevant to this presentation. That's enough from me. I'm going to sit down and enjoy my beer. And as I say, if there's anything I think we need to interpret on the slides, I'll chip in.
Just jump in. Yeah, thank you. That's great. Yeah, we could probably talk to you for about 4 or 5 hours on the GDPR. We're just going to try and give you a really high-level overview of some key points that you'll need to be aware of. I've been speaking to a few people upstairs, and some people actually don't even know what the GDPR is. Is there anybody in the room who doesn't have any awareness of GDPR? Most people have a rough idea. Okay, so essentially it applies to all companies worldwide that process personal data of EU citizens, regardless of location. It also still applies, as with the current law, as to businesses established within the EU. But it's this extra territoriality that's new under this new regulation, and that's what's capturing businesses like yourselves. So the GDPR considers any data that can be used to identify an individual as personal data. It's pretty difficult to find data that wouldn't fall into that category. It would only be data that's been completely anonymised, or is just unable to identify an individual. For you guys, I put some examples on here. It could be personal data that's held on film crews, actors, anybody else that's said, oh yes, please jump in.
Yes. One thing. So when you say it's completely anonymized, you mean, I think that is also, it has to be completely impossible for anybody.
That is correct.
So when you say completely anonymized, yeah. It's not like you have a key.
No, pseudonymized data.
Just to encrypt it, right?
Yeah, so pseudonymized.
Just one thing, because that you would think that you were safe then, because you wouldn't be.
No. Pseudonymized data, which is what you're talking about with the key, that is still personal data and it would still fall under the GDPR.
Anybody can do it, right?
Absolutely.
Can actually,
yes.
Then it's still personal data.
Yes, yeah. Truly anonymized data is not personal data and that falls outside the remit, but as you know, that's extremely difficult to do in reality. Other examples are payments to individuals, tax information, your distribution lists, all of that would fall under the remit of the GDPR.
So if you think about the amount of metadata that goes into a production, particularly now, the years ago it wasn't so much, but now the thirst for information that is associated to a film and travels around with a film set and close to set workflows, the amount of data that will be going through that production on set or close to set is substantial. Mm. That's the key thing to take away from that slide. It's likely that if you've got productions running in the EU now, then this will impact on you. And certainly if it's going to run post the 25th of May, it will definitely impact.
And that would include things like the call sheet, which is actually informing people of where the physical location of your staff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think of another business environment, you don't actually publish where every single person is going to be located. That's a very strange thing to do. Mm. But we do it on a daily basis. And that means that's information that actually must be protected.
Yeah. I think just an important note on that as well is the volume of information is actually irrelevant. There's no threshold for the amount of staff you have or the amount of data you have. If you have this personal data, you must completely comply with everything. So that's a key point. So you've got this personal data. How do you handle it? What do you have to do with it? So personal data, it must be processed lawfully, fairly, and in a transparent manner. So that essentially means that you have to have a legal basis for processing the personal data that you hold. And I've put some examples up there. It's not limited to that. There are more. But the most common ones are that you have that information to comply with a legal obligation. You need it to perform a contract. You have a legitimate business interest to hold it. Or another one, which is very commonly used, sometimes prefer to stay away from it, but it's individual consent. And the reason that we try and stay away from consent as much as possible is that it's getting increasingly difficult to obtain validly under the GDPR. The rules around it are becoming very, very tight. It must be freely given, specific, informed, and an unambiguous indication of the individual's wishes. Essentially, what that means in practical terms is that you've probably all seen pre-ticked boxes on forms that you hand out to everybody for various purposes. That is no longer valid consent under the GDPR. You have to have very specific wording, very clear wording, and you have to have an active action on the part of the individual to signify that they've consented. That's going to cause a lot of people a lot of problems, particularly around marketing. Yes, sorry, go ahead.
So if you, as a condition of hiring, mm-hmm. or as a condition of participating in an event, is there some reason that you cannot require that someone give their consent up front for whatever distribution of information may happen subsequent to the employment or to the event?
Absolutely. So under the GDPR and even current law, there's an exemption for employee data. There's an employment context legal basis that you can rely on. It's explicitly there. So that would cover all of your HR processing. And what was the other question? Was it marketing or an event?
A content participant agreement. If you're going to hold an event where some data is going to be shared, email addresses and so forth.
If it's anything to do with direct marketing, which I suspect holding an event would ultimately lead to you be trying to get the information to send them something going forward, you will need consent for that, if it's unsolicited.
I also think with the, at least in Germany, so Germany is sometimes strict.
Germany is particularly strict,
But with our employees, there was implicit consent for us to process their payroll, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to get active consent to send that information to the United States.
Yeah.
So individual crew members on their own could individually say, no, you may not tell an American the United States.
I think what you're touching on there, Lulu,
which makes managing obviously very, very difficult.
Yeah,
so
that's absolutely
our option was we just won't say any.
Yeah, I think the issue Lulu's touching on there is international data transfer. So this is really having the legal basis for even having that data and how you're using it. But then if you want to send it abroad, which most people do, you have to have a transfer mechanism, a legal transfer mechanism to be able to do that. I was just chatting with a gentleman here about Privacy Shield, and that's one that most EU citizens, EU companies will choose to implement for transferring data from the EU to the US, and which is still valid. We were having that discussion. quick thing to touch on just before we move on from this slide is privacy notices. The rules around them are getting extremely tight as well. You can't really just put what you want in them anymore. There's a predetermined set of content that must go into them. They must also be displayed prominently on the websites and also at the first point of contact with individuals. If anything changes in terms of how you process your data or where you send it to, you must also keep them constantly updated.
I don't know how many people are from the production space, but from my understanding, a lot of what we're talking about may be counterintuitive to a production. It may be jargonistic. And so one of the things I think the challenges that are ahead is raising the level of cultural awareness of what the risks of not complying with GDPR will be. So part of what we're trying to do with the toolkit that we've developed, and we're going to partner with CDSA and Mesa on, is that we can help raise that level of cultural awareness. So it's converting some of this jargon that's on the slides into a language that the production staff will understand.
Mm. Mm. I think that's why you wanted to mention a bit on this slide. A key principle under the GDPR is implementing an appropriate level of security around your personal data. The GDPR, it doesn't actually prescribe what that means. Really, that's up to you to assess the type of data you have, how much you have, the nature of it, what you do with it, and then it's for you to determine what those measures must be. But I've put here on the slide as well, you must do this before you initiate any process. The big change under the GDPR is that privacy must be by design, and it mustn't be an afterthought anymore. You must be putting these into your operational processes day to day.
Sales pitch on that is the fact that products like the CDSA Content Protection Security Standard may be your evidence to demonstrate that you've taken an appropriate stance towards the infrastructure security that you're operating on, whether that be pre-vis all the way through to digital distribution. If there's personal data on there, then that type of program may be relevant as evidence towards your compliance with GDPR. And the same with the product that we're not allowed to discuss because we're all under NDA, but it's the world's best kept secret. So the same will apply to that.
Yeah. And just to your point earlier, sir, as well, pseudonymisation is a recognised security measure under the GDPR. That will mitigate down any risk of fines. If you were to be investigated by a regulator and you had those measures in place, it would help to bring down any fine that would be implemented. Final point on here, which is just something to, it really is one of the key principles of the GDPR, and that is not collecting data just for the sake of collecting it anymore. You've really got to have a purpose for what you're collecting. You can't hold on to it for any longer than is necessary, and it must be securely deleted once that purpose has been expired. This is one that's creating a lot of scaremongering, actually, data breaches. So the key thing under the regulation is that you have to notify your local regulator of a breach, and that could be an accidental loss or an intentional hack, could be anything, within 72 hours of discovering it. Now, for most people, that creates a lot of fear, really. How, do you even know you've had it in that period of time? How do you handle it? Have you got the right people in your team that are ready to go? So that's quite a short time period. I've really kept this slide as detailed. I wouldn't go through it all with you now, but it's a very, very useful one to take away with you. It pretty much summarises the entire breach obligation on one page. General breaches, you have to notify to the regulator within that period, and I've also listed the content that would have to go into that notification. Secondly, down here, which is the one that causes a lot of problems for a risk to reputation, is that if there's a data breach which presents a high risk to individuals, most often that's loss of financial data or sensitive data, you also have to notify the individuals directly, and that's obviously in the public domain. So once that's out, there's not really much you can do about that, but try and put a positive spin on it. And again, the content there of what has to go into that notification is up there. But really internally, it means you're refreshing all of your training, your policies and procedures around breach reporting, and really making sure that everybody in your organisation understands the requirement under the GDPR. Accountability. So the GDPR places a huge emphasis on the documentation that organisations now have to keep to demonstrate their accountability. It's not just a case that you have to do it, you have to be able to show that you're doing it. So you have to maintain a wide range of documentation. which will include your privacy notices, which we've also discussed. It will also include things like privacy impact assessments, data inventories. There's a very narrowly drafted exception for that, but it would be unlikely that many people would fall into it. So you're now having to keep logs of the data that you hold, what purpose you hold it for, who you share it with, and where it's transferred to. And that can be called upon a regulator to be investigated. They'll want to have a look at that. They can give you notice to come and inspect those. Impact assessments, you'll have to do those if you have data which would relate in result in any high risk to individuals. So that's data which is particularly sensitive in nature, health data or financial data. And also if you have a large-scale CCTV, you'll also have to do privacy impact assessments and things like that. I'm just quickly rushing through, I'm conscious of time. Data protection officers, I'm not sure how many people are aware of this concept or not. I don't think it's particularly prevalent in the US yet. It is more common in the EU. But you will have to appoint a specific individual, a data protection officer, if you monitor individuals on a large scale, if you process a lot of sensitive data. You will have to have an individual who holds this role going forward. The number of employees is completely irrelevant as to whether you have to have this. It must also be a very senior position within your organisation. And the responsibilities are all listed there. I won't go through them all now. But in our toolkit, we have got a very short guidance note which would tell you exactly where they need to be located, if you could outsource it, and different things like that.
Doesn't have to be
you.
A dedicated role, though, Steph.
It can be somebody who has two functions. It often is, yes. Yeah, it often is. But it's really, under the GDPR, it's the seniority of it that's coming into play. It can't just be Joe Bloggs. It has to be somebody who has some gravitas within the organisation. And I've had a quick chat with some people this morning about this, saying that I'm only a service provider, so do I really have to do all of these things? And the answer is yes. Before, the way the data privacy worked in the EU is that you'd have to rely on contracts to flow down your obligations as a service provider. Now you'll have direct obligations, you'll have to implement the security measures, you'll have to inform of breaches, and you'll also have to sign up to written contracts that have set language within them. And if you fail to agree with that, it's not only that you'd have a breach of contract, but you'd also have a breach under the GDPR.
A question.
Yes, yeah.
Service providers, mm-hmm. who, based on what they're storing about, mm-hmm. people, are their user credentials.
Yeah.
User credentials are PII.
Yes, they are.
So a lot of vendors don't understand that user credentials are actually part of a person's PII.
Yeah.
So it doesn't exempt you if that's the only thing you've done.
No, that's a really good point. And so what happens if we get it wrong? The fines are now really quite huge. We're talking up to 20 million euros or 4% of worldwide turnover. Things that would be attracting fines that large are not having a legal basis for processing your data. So we're talking about the consent thresholds that we were discussing before. Failure to impact subject access requests, data breaches. If you don't handle them right, and you can't show that you've mitigated circumstances, you're going to be really looking at the top-level fines for these instances. But, you know, if we've seen this morning in the rooms upstairs with Larson, it's not just financial. The risk to your reputation is potentially huge. So it really is serious stuff now. We're not just talking about a data protection privacy policy that needs to be posted on your website. It's something that everybody needs to pay attention to. And try and get ahead of the game, really. We're now going to be seeing US-style class actions in the EU as well, groups coming together. So litigation costs could potentially be quite massive.
I think the thing for me about that is the threat landscape now is such that with the ransomware type attacks, that people going after content, it may well be in the future, that they may want to impact heavily on an organisation that's involved in the creative industry, either entertainment industry, but they may not focus on the content anymore. They may focus on the personal data, because the impact of that will be higher. Yeah. And we need to be cognizant and aware of that constantly moving forward. And so that really is the piece around the reputational risk. And, you know, from what we heard from Larson this morning, the effort that those guys have had to go through retrospectively, they were not aware fully of what was available to them.
Yeah.
So the importance of these types of events that we have today and these types of discussions are really where we're trying to raise the cultural awareness is a really big thing for me to take forward.
And GDPR makes them responsible for educating themselves.
It does, yeah.
You can't say I didn't know.
No. Accountability is the absolute key principle under this regulation, and being able to demonstrate things is what's important.
And again, about the response, we've heard over the last few years, there's been a lot of panels that have gone around the subject of it being, it's not a matter of if, it's when. And that's going to be relative to GDPR also. I think that you're going to get a lot of those similar sort of...
Quick clarification on Peter's point. we have a SaaS platform that we provide to studio partners here in the United States. The moment a studio signs up an employee, without us knowing, that resides in the United States, and they put in a username and password into our system, we are now liable?
Sorry, no, you just said just the United States.
Yeah, our client is in the United States. It's a studio. It's a Studio X, whoever you may, whatever you may. But they have employees all around the world. Mm-hmm. So if they have a European employee register in our system, does that open us up to liability?
Yeah, so what you are, you're a service provider in this scenario, right? That's what you're saying, yes. So what you will have is you'll have a limited set of direct obligations. You won't have to comply with the entire GDPR. There's a slide, I think, like here. Yeah, so you have, as a service provider, rather than having to comply with the entire GDPR, you just have a limited set of obligations which are there.
And this is even if we're not aware of the fact that these people are not residing in the United States and we're only dealing with their U.S.
I would suggest that not being aware would not be a suitable defense.
You're not allowed
not to be aware, you can't say that.
I think the way the contractual arrangements are designed to set up under the GDPR is that there really shouldn't be a reason why you wouldn't be aware, because if the controller is also doing their job properly, that's the content owner or whoever it might be that you're doing business with, they should have given you a data processing agreement that makes you aware of all of these things.
One thing I've heard is if your service in the United States is available elsewhere in the world, then in the case of this, you're liable. In other words, if people can log in from Europe,
absolutely.
You're on the map.
And by the way, I mean, this, although there's some regulation and compliance around this, generally this is good practice for any business, anywhere on the
world. I think it will become best practice across the board eventually. It's just a timing issue, but this is just, you know, forcing the way forward. Sorry, I just wanted to finish. Thanks. Okay, so I need the wine now, I think. So I do realise this is a really dull subject, and it's a lot to take in. There's a lot of detail, and we'd be more than happy to speak to people on an individual basis if you want a bit more information. But key things to take away: applies to all companies worldwide. If you process data of EU citizens, you're going to have a lot of documentation in place, which you should get in place before the fact, not after the fact. That's privacy impact assessments, your privacy notices, data inventories, and you need to ascertain whether or not you qualify to need a data protection officer. There's a breach notification. You've got to have privacy by design. You've got to have it in place before you implement any process. And that liability is extended beyond content owners. It now moves down the supply chain directly. Consent, we've talked about, is getting very, very tough to obtain. Try and rely on something else if you can. Yes, sorry. Do you have a question?
No, I was just asking, just on the compliance piece there.
Yeah.
Does it extend into the IT asset management and being able to prove back as part of the GDPR?
Yeah.
Basically, where your hardware assets are, and also your software, SaaS, who's using what application.
Yeah, all comes
into it. So you've actually got to provide that usage data for hardware and software back to the GDPR compliance.
Absolutely. The best thing that you can do to start with is do a complete data mapping exercise. Get yourself the information so that when you're asked the question, you know exactly where it is, who's got access to it, etc.
And that's then providing as part of that an actual sort of compliance statement.
It is, because, absolutely. That data mapping exercise will fill the gaps for your data inventory. All of that information, you'll transfer it over, and that's already ticking one of the boxes for documentation. So it's definitely a worthwhile exercise. Yeah.
But it's not enough just to know where it is. You know, you have to have it in the right place.
You do,
Because you can't have it in India.
Well, you can have it in India, but you need to have a data transfer agreement in place to support that. Yeah, absolutely.
There's no safe haven.
No. Well, there's whitelisted jurisdictions, which is like Australia. They have a very similar level of data protection to the UK and EU, so they whitelist certain countries. But India is not one of them.
The one positive of GDPR is these are all great best practices for us to implement anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get to get our general counsel
to say we must do it.
Yeah.
So suddenly we actually get to pull in a more powerful department to say, you know what, this has to happen. Whereas, you know, right now we're telling everybody, we have to be more secure, we have to be more secure. Mm-hmm. Now we've got someone on our side to help fund it.
I'll just say one quick, because I'd like to just hear just 30 seconds from Alex, if you don't mind, just as a quick case study. But just from our sales pitch point of view, what I've done is I've designed a compliance toolkit, essentially, which is a suite of guidance notes, implementation materials and template policies and procedures, all of which are GDPR compliant. So we'd be happy to speak to anybody if they'd like to discuss
that. And actually, we're partnering with CDSA and Messer on this. So we like to give a little bit back.
Yeah, they will be discussed.
We'll offer a 1-hour one-to-one consultancy on any of this subject matter if it's of interest or is relevant to you. If you contact Stephanie on the details that are provided on the literature you've got in the chair, we're quite happy to set up a call. Stephanie's predominantly UK-based, but we're over here for 1 week in every six. So there's no problem for Stephanie to come back over to arrange one-to-ones if it's of interest to you. We have got associates that are going to be working in the US also, that are going to be LA-based and New York-based. So we're trying to build up a network so that we can support the industry from a global perspective, the same as we do with CDSA compliance process. Okay.
Alex, do you just
want to
say a quick bit about how
BBC
are dealing with all of this?
I think the key message is kind of don't panic. There has been a lot of kind of scaremongering about fines. So I work for Worldwide, BBC Worldwide, which is a commercial arm, so we take talent, we have employees, we sell books, DVDs, so we have a lot of flowing into the business. And there have been lots of horror stories about kind of 4% or 20 million or whatever. Now, who's aware of my turnover? So, my math works out at 40 million. But if you think about the regulator in the UK, the ICO, I mean, they investigated 23,000 cases of data misuse last year, but there'd be a hack or a loss. They fined 16 of them. So it's really the sledgehammer in their toolkit, if you like, of sanctions that they can impose. And they would do that in kind of a worst-case scenario. If you have just ignored regulation and the requirements of the law, then yes, they will take action. But if you can demonstrate that you have a list of all your data processing activities, what systems you're using, whether they're internal, external, you've got proper contracts in place with third parties, you know, the countries in which the data is being stored, how it's being used, and you can demonstrate consent, then the regulators are going to see that as a most positive step, if you like, because they do take it seriously, and it's just been an unfortunate occurrence.
Exactly.
And going back to what you were saying about accountability, I mean, I do a lot of sessions in the UK about this, and the best way to look at it is CAT or CAT. So it's GDPR has come about as a result of what the likes of Google and Facebook have been doing for years, which is a lack of transparency. So that's the T. It's giving control back to consumers or individuals about how their data is being used and for them to decide how that data can be used. And then it's about companies generating data showing accountability. So being accountable for what they collect and how they store it. Was there something else that I wanted to say? I don't think so. I think just quickly two things. What most concerns me is the unstructured data in our business. So the data that we don't know about that sits in Excel files or whatever, and then Outlook or any email tool, which has largely become a document management system these days rather than just an email tool. So that's where the focus for us over the next 6 months is really about. But please come and talk to me if you want to know more.
Thank you.
Most of the threatening hackers threatening our film industry here that have been caught actually came from the UK, live in the UK. While I agree that this is best practice, a lot of it's very costly, and as you pointed out, it sounds very threatening to US companies. Do you think this might lead to US companies hiring less employees from the UK or even doing their out of the UK?
Uh,
I don't think so. I mean, data protection laws across the world are becoming more and more useful. So
Asia-Pacific has already followed suit.
Exactly. So if you've already got a good system in place for data collection and protection, then GDPR doesn't require you to do much more than you're doing now.
It should be an extension rather than starting new
time. Well, Lulu would correct me, but I think incentives for operating in the EU, for example, in production space at the moment, are quite substantial. Therefore, a lot of the work is actually migrating towards those territories rather than moving away from it. And I don't know what you think, but it's unlikely to change in the foreseeable future.
I mean, we have, as an industry,
our highest. We're way out of time. I'm so sorry. We're super behind already, but we can't go much longer than that. Please stick around. We can chat in the hallway at the networking reception. We'll also distribute the audio and their presentation to all attendees if you want to go over those materials after the show. Thank you all for sticking around. Sorry to interrupt. Give them a big round of applause. Thank you. Thank you, Converged Threat. Next up is Nick Logical, and we're just.